Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is former co-host Michael Shackelford. Tonight, Shaq will tell us about gambling in Costa Rica and all about playing bingo with an advantage. I know Munchkin is planning to start playing advantage bingo as soon as blue-haired ladies start looking good to him. We'll be talking to Michael shortly. In the last election, sites like Intrade.com and Bodog.com, among others, Pinnacle, allowed you to bet on who was going to win the election. As the elections neared, Shaq and I regularly reported on this show how the odds were changing. These gambling sites almost always picked the winner correctly, although officially it wasn't legal for Americans to bet on these sites. That may change in Nevada. Munch, what do you know about this?
Well, just that a state senator in Nevada, his name is Tick Sagerblom, has introduced a bill that would allow election betting in Nevada. So, any opportunities to bet are a good thing. More potential, places to find an advantage. So hopefully it'll go through.
And it wouldn't surprise me if that goes through. You'll be able to bet on things like Academy Awards, too. Things like that, which I know is one of Shaq's specialties.
Actually, I think you're already allowed to bet on those kinds of things in Nevada, but just nobody does.
No book offers it.
Right.
If so, that would be new, because I remember when I was a dealer at the Castaways, we had a very tiny sports book called the Hole in the Wall Sports Book, and they put up odds for who shot JR before that famous Dallas episode aired. And the gaming commission came in and made them shut it down and said that they were only allowed to take bets on sporting events. So I don't know if you can bet on the Academy Awards in Nevada or not.
I remember that El Cortez took bets on where the Skylab would fall down. And I believe that gaming thought that was just really unprofessional. And that's probably at the same time they stopped allowing everybody to bet on that kind of stuff. But I read about 2 years ago that they reversed themselves and they were going to start allowing bets on non-sports. But so far, nobody has shown any interest in doing so.
I watched Dallas a few times way back when, and I thought shooting JR was very sporting. But somehow,
it would seem odd that they don't have interest in it, Michael, because all those things they are. I mean, William Hill and Cantor are both, European sports books, and they're, running a lot of the books in Nevada. So, and they book that action overseas. So I know they want to be able to, accept these kind of bets.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know.
My most recent column on the Las Vegas Advisor website concerned luck versus skill in gambling results. There will always be fluctuation in your gambling score based on luck, but the more skill you have determines the level of those fluctuations. Munch, did you have something to say on this subject?
Yeah, you quoted somebody in the article, I forget who, about luck plus skill equals success. And what was the second quote? Something like,
it was
really lucky plus skill equals great success? Something like that?
Yeah.
I think actually, obviously, luck really is a very small factor. I think that a lot of professionals, gamblers, get lucky when they first start, because the ones who hit a bad streak when they first start, many of them just quit gambling or quit trying to make it as a professional gambler. But I think the most important factor wasn't even mentioned, and that I think is work ethic. You know, if I had to back somebody, I would rather take the guy who's going to go out there and put in a ton of hours week in and week out over the guy with even the guy with more skill.
I agree. Now that the author, the book that inspired that article was Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow. Kahneman is a Nobel Prize winner in economics. The chapter that inspired the article was about regression to the mean. Now, in sports handicapping, the general public seems to assume that the trends will continue. That is, if a team won 2 weeks in a row, the public assumes it'll cover the spread this week. And if the team lost 2 weeks in a row, the public assumes it will not cover next week. Now, I would think smart bettors can do well by betting against this public trend. Now, Michael, as at least an occasional sports handicapper, do you agree with that?
I agree that that's the square mentality, but and I've looked at this, especially in baseball, if it's a good value to bet on teams that have, say, lost three consecutive times and four consecutive times, and I looked at various different patterns in betting right after the pattern, and to be honest with you, I didn't find much value there. Maybe it would be a better value in football where you get more square bettors, but in baseball, I didn't see it.
Interesting.
Yeah, the square bettors would have to bet it so much that it would actually alter the line, which I don't think is, you know, really going to happen much.
Yeah, I tend to think that you do see that, but betting it the other way is still not enough to overcome the house advantage.
You know, it's funny, the interesting that difference shows up in casinos where roulette players, you know, if they see five reds in a row, they say, oh, I have to bet on black. But the baccarat players, if they see five bankers in a row, say, oh, it's a trend. I have to bet on banker. Just interesting, the psychology of the different types of players.
And they're both equally correct. As in, not at all. Okay, now,
right.
A couple weeks ago, we mentioned on this show that we needed a logo for the show. And so we asked our listeners for some submissions. We agreed that in addition to our everlasting love and thanks, that we would give the provider of the best logo either $1 million or a couple of books, our choice. So far, we've received four attempts, and they're posted on richardmunchkin.com. The one Munchkin likes best, I like, but I think the type size of the with an edge part of the logo is a bit too large. But otherwise, I think it's pretty good. And another one I think is pretty good, although I'm not crazy about the lavender color of part of it. So if you'd like to express an opinion as to which logo you like, feel free to do so on his website, richardmunchkin.com. Also,
or if you'd like to submit your own, attempt, it needs to be 1,400 by 1,400 pixels. Because eventually this is going to be the iTunes, the logo in iTunes.
All right, are you collecting your $1 million already, Munch? I'm collecting the books.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm just waiting for a $500 savings bond to work its way up to $1 million, and then I'll be ready.
Might take a few weeks. All right, so let's talk to Michael Shackelford. Mike has been a frequent guest on the show, in addition to being a co-host for about a year. Probably close to 40% of all of the Gambling with an Edge shows have featured Shaq in one way or another. He's an actuary by profession and has turned his mathematical eye towards a variety of gambling topics for quite some time. Michael Shackelford, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks. It's nice to be back.
Good to have you. Now, a few months ago on this show, we reported that you were very sick with food poisoning, and there was actually some chance you weren't going to pull through. First question, did you live or die?
I think that I died, and this is just like a parallel universe, and, you know, none of this is really happening.
Uh-huh. Now, second question, don't tell our sponsors. They probably wouldn't want to pay for that. Okay, second question is, are you all better now, and are you planning to live happily ever after?
Yes, I absolutely am all better, and if anything, I'm inspired to be even more healthy and live a healthy lifestyle, and try to, you know, improve my odds at living a long time as much as I can.
Now, why was this food poisoning so much worse than normal food poisoning?
You know, I still don't know, despite being in the hospital for 3 days. But as I understand it, whatever this type of food poisoning got into my blood, and I had what was called a septic shock. Basically, I passed out. My temperature was 104 degrees, and I don't remember passing out, of course, but the next thing I remember after passing out was waking up in the hospital. I don't remember the ambulance ride whatsoever, and, you know, I think that if nobody was home at the time I passed out, you know, things might have been a lot worse, and the doctors that were looking at my case said, you know, you easily could have died, you know, given how bad you were when you came in here. You know, there was he said that for what I had, there was a 20% chance of fatality.
Wow. And do you know where it came from?
Yes. I don't remember I forget the name of the restaurant, but across Maryland Avenue, I mean Boulevard from UNLV, there's a bunch of little strip malls that cater to students, and one of them is a real little place that sells food from Guatemala. And I'm 100% sure that's where I got it, because I ate there in the morning, and I didn't eat anything else the rest of the day. And a few hours after this is just when it started to hit me, and I started just to feel lousy, and it kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Do you have to wear shopping bags on your head when you go into this Guatemala restaurant to be authentic? Now we're on a Central American theme. You recently took a trip to Costa Rica and are going to tell us a bit about the gambling scene there. We want the bottom line first. Is Costa Rica a place we should consider going if we want good gambling conditions?
No.
The wrong answer.
No. No, not only is it probably a lousy place for advantage players, but the casinos themselves are not very attractive. I wouldn't recommend them for recreational players either.
All right. So
I made one trip down there a few years back, and yeah, I was really disappointed with you know, I think you pointed out in your review on your website that these Central and South American or Central American countries tend to put their big cities in the middle of the country as opposed to on the coast.
Yes.
And boy, San Jose just was a dump. And yeah, the casinos were not very good. We did go to the rainforest and, you know, did one of those canopy tours through the rainforest. But yeah, I was very disappointed with Costa Rica, as was my wife.
With the whole country in general, not just San Jose. You were disappointed?
Well, we only went to San Jose.
Okay.
So
yeah, I have never heard anyone have anything good to say about San Jose, but the rest of the country, everyone says great things. And I also went to Jaco, which is on the Pacific coast, and I thought that was very nice, and Manuel Ortega State Park, which was very beautiful, and I'm sure there's, you know, my mother has been there 4 times and just loves it. So you know, I hate to talk about parts of the country I've never been to, but I've heard nothing but good things once you get outside of San Jose. But San Jose itself was dirty, and I've heard there's a very high crime rate, and the casinos were small and not friendly. The games they had did not offer very good odds. So I definitely would not go to Costa Rica if your reason is for going there is to gamble. If that's your reason, I would much recommend Panama instead.
So why were you
when
there?
When I went, the Horseshoe at that time, you know, had a 10% loss rebate. And plus they paid, you know, our expenses down there. You know, you wrote extensively in your review about the rampant prostitution in San Jose. And I have to say that that was my wife's, she thought the most interesting part of the city was all of the prostitutes.
So did I.
Oh, well, since we're on this subject, Michael, did you go? I assume Mrs. Shack wasn't there with you.
No, I don't think she would have had a good time doing a lot of research on casinos.
Okay, where?
And she might have not let me. She might have made me leave if she had seen what goes on inside them.
Uh-huh. So are you? Do you have any good stories you can tell us about these ladies?
Well, let me paint the picture for you. At some of the casinos, they are just magnets for prostitutes. prostitution is a major reason people go to Costa Rica, that and to enjoy nature. They, of course, two very different crowds. And one of the main ways you find these women are in the casinos and bars. And one particularly notorious hotel and casino for this in San Jose is called the Casino Del Rey. And it absolutely must have at least 100 prostitutes in a pretty small casino on most nights. Sunday nights are slow. And
only 80.
I arrived on a Sunday, and it was pretty slow that night. I heard that's their night off. But, yeah, I had seen a similar, you know, thing in Panama. So I was not as taken aback by it as I was when I went to Panama. But, yes, the casinos and bars there, not all of them, but the particular ones are just packed with lovely Latina women available for about $100 an hour.
Now, and you mentioned that in Panama it was mostly Colombian women, but
yes.
Is that true in Costa Rica as well, or are there Costa Rican women, or what?
Yes, that's a good question. Yes, when I went to Panama 2 years ago, I found that the women that worked out of the casinos were almost 100% Colombian. And whereas you get more of a mix in Costa Rica, it's partially Costa Rican natives. You get a lot from Nicaragua. You do get some from Colombia and some from the Dominican Republic. And I'm sure there's some other countries who I just didn't meet anybody from.
This sounds like you've been doing a lot of research on these ladies.
There's no harm in talking.
All right. Now, why were you in Costa Rica in the first place?
The people at the Five Dimes Internet Casino were kind enough to invite me down there, all expenses paid. And they and their friends showed me around, and I had a great time. And so the purpose of the trip was, number one, to just accept their offer and get to know them a little bit better. And number two, being a gambling writer, I wanted something to write about. And it's getting harder and harder to find things to write about here in Vegas. So sometimes I need to leave the country to find some new games and new topics to discuss.
Now, that actually interests me. I didn't see any reference to Five Dimes on your site. Are you going to write up something about Five Dimes?
Well, as you know, Bodog/Bovada are the only advertisers on the site, and they don't like it when I mention their competitors. So so out of respect for Bodog, I didn't mention Five Dimes in the article, but they have no gag on me about what I can say on the radio.
Okay, because I'm curious, because back when there was a lot more internet gambling, you know, I was doing a lot of that up until 2006. Five Dimes actually had quite a bad reputation as internet casinos go. Have they changed? Is their reputation getting any better?
Well, if you go on any forum and look at a thread about Five Dimes, you know, like any place, you will see some critics in some place and some players that said, you know, I like the place. In my opinion, Five Dimes is one of the better places that accepts U.S. players. They honor payouts very quickly, I would say within a week. I think the customer service is pretty good. They have a whole wide array of things you can bet on, both in terms of sports and the casino. Now, where some people have complained about them is they do not tolerate advantage players easily and have no compunction to throw them out. And some advantage players have complained about the way that it happened, for example, in Five Dimes not honoring a bonus that the player already met the terms of. And I don't necessarily agree with every decision Five Dimes has ever made, but I think overall, for recreational players, they're a good place.
You mentioned rum.
By the way, before we get off Costa Rica, I just have to say, Bob, that the next time we have Max Rubin on, we have to get him to tell the story of when he was mugged by transsexual hookers in Costa Rica.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because outside my hotel room, I had a balcony room, and I could see lots of them working the street corners. And I must say they did a very good job of looking like women, at least from a distance. So if you ever go to Costa Rica, don't pick up a woman on a street corner, because she's not a woman.
Yeah, and they don't fight like women either.
Okay, good. I guess we're going to schedule Max in the near future. All right. So you mentioned on the your website rummy. Now, I thought rummy was a form of like canasta or gin rummy.
So did I. But in Costa Rica, blackjack is allegedly illegal. So what the casinos do is they offer a blackjack variant, which they call rummy. I don't know why. It's a confusing name. But it's like blackjack, except there are no blackjacks. An ace and a 10-point card is just 21 points. And so if you get that, it's just 21. There's no 3-2 special win. However, they do give you some extra rules in terms of a bonus, like if you get a 3 of a kind or a 3-card straight flush, then you will automatically get 3 to 5 times what your wager was. You don't even need to win to get these bonuses. And I break down all the odds and the strategy on my website on a new page called Rummy, and I find that with optimal strategy, the house edge is exactly 1%. So it's a lot worse than blackjack, but it's still the best game you're likely to find in Costa Rica.
Interesting. All right.
And it's countable?
Sure. And I bet that the casinos in there would have no clue how to identify a counter. And the penetration is similar to here in the U.S. They don't take big bets down there. I think the most you're likely to find is 500. But that's definitely...
500 U.S. dollars?
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely worth looking into if you're a counter and going down there.
So you could bet 5 hours. Okay, good. Now, let's go bingo. In general, how do you determine if a particular bingo game yields an advantage?
Well, that's a big question, and I have been doing months and months of research to try to find the answer to it. Now, in bingo, there's two important things. How much money are they going to give away at any given session, and how many competing cards are in the room? And of course, they come right out and tell you how much they're going to give away. But how do you know how many cards you're up against? And I've developed a very complicated mathematical calculation to estimate the number of cards in play for any given session at either the Red Rock or the Suncoast, and I'm going to expand this to the other casinos. And it also is very influenced by how big the cash ball jackpot size is. So I largely determine when it's a good time to play by playing at those sessions when there are as few competing cards as possible.
And do you have a specific you want to increase the competition against you at these times? Do you want to recommend a particular time people should play?
Well, the closest casino to my house that has bingo is the Suncoast, so that's where I usually play. According to my analysis, the best sessions to play are the 5 o'clock and the 11 o'clock p.m. session. And that may come as a surprise to some people, including myself. I thought for a long time the 9 o'clock p.m. session was probably the best, where they have a $2,500 guaranteed coverall game. But no, you know, that big win at the end there induces a lot of players, therefore a lot of competing cards. And when I weigh both the amount of money they give away and the amount of competition, again, I find that the 5 and the 11 o'clock p.m. sessions are the best, in particular when there is a very low cash ball jackpot, preferably right after they reseeded at $500.
I would think a lot of people would leave after the 9 o'clock session, and, you know, the 11 is past their bedtime, so you would have much less competition.
Exactly, and it's no big secret that most bingo players are elderly, and it's no big secret that they tend to like to go to sleep early and wake up early.
Now, is counting the number of heads in the bingo room give you good information as to how much competition there is?
No. I used to count heads when I played, and I found it didn't help at all. It was a very bad estimator for the number of cards in play. There are just different types of bingo players. Some are very recreational and only buy 20 bucks worth of cards. And then there are some that I think are pretty sharp players, and they go in there when they think the odds are in their favor, and they just buy hundreds of cards. And you can't tell, you know, a player just from their head which type they are. And I tend to think that it's the sessions that give away more money that tend to attract the bigger spenders.
Do bingo players tend to be good losers?
No, including me. The way you should think about bingo is that it's not the casino or the bingo caller that's the enemy. It's the other players. If they kept calling balls, you would eventually win. And it's other players that are bingoing before you that are causing you to lose. So I think of bingo like as a war where it's the last man standing. And those other players that are calling bingo, they are stealing my jackpots. You know, you want to see you don't like it when they win. You want to win. You got to be very aggressive and competitive when it comes to bingo.
Do you even pretend to be nice to little old ladies across the table?
I like to sit by myself without too many neighbors. Sometimes I will get into a little friendly banter with somebody sitting close to me, and of course I won't begrudge if that person wins. But what really annoys me is when little old ladies, when they win, instead of yelling bingo enthusiastically, they lift up their hand halfway and just go, winner, you know, as if they were entitled to win, as if they were supposed to. You know, if you're gonna steal my money, at least be happy about it.
So Ken Adams had an interesting article in the last couple of days about how these games are dying. Keno, he was specifically talking about, but he also mentioned bingo. I mean, do you think bingo is even going to be around in another 5 or 10 years?
I'm not a good one to answer that because I've only very recently started to take an interest in bingo. If for no other reason, I feel there's not too much left in the world of gambling for me to analyze. But I do know that a lot of casinos have taken out bingo rooms. In talking with people in the industry,
it is a lot of floor space.
Yeah, it is a big floor space haul. I mean, most casinos are happy if their bingo rooms break even. The reason for the bingo is to get those players hopefully gambling on something else in between sessions.
Huh.
Now, what is validation when you're playing bingo, and how often do you validate?
Validation means that it's an extra fee you must pay per card that you buy, and at the beginning of the session, they will pick a ball at random. Say it's B13. They will say, this is the cash ball for this session. It's B13, and then most places will hopefully put it back in the drum for the first game, and if anyone
not
calls,
always put it back in the drum?
Yeah, some places do not put it back in the drum for the first game, so therefore it's impossible to hit the cash ball jackpot on the first game because they say that the first ball called serves as the first number called in that game and is the cash ball jackpot. At both the Red Rock and the Suncoast, they return it to the drum. So if anyone calls bingo exactly when that ball is drawn, they will win the cash ball progressive jackpot. So if someone calls bingo right when B13 is called in my example, they would win whatever that jackpot is.
So do you validate?
No. I find that validation is a lousy value unless the jackpot gets really significantly big. And I'm going to publish something on my website soon that says how big. But in general, it needs to be, I would say, between $2,000 and $4,000 big for validation to become a good value. But when the higher the jackpot is, the more competition it induces. And I find that to get the most value as a player, you should play when the progressive jackpot for the cash ball is as small as possible, preferably right after it was hit and it's at the reseed value. That's going to keep a lot of the cash ball jackpot chasers away, and you'll face much less competition. So to summarize, play when the cash ball jackpot is small and don't validate.
What's a TED, and do you use them?
A TED is a small computer that can store all your bingo cards. There is a $2 fee to rent one. So when you approach the window and you tell them what kind of cards you want, they will often say paper or electronic. And so paper meaning the paper cards where you have to daub them, The alternative is they electronically load one of these little computers with all the cards that you purchased. When you go and sit down, you put in a number that's printed on your receipt, and they all pop up there. And the machine does everything but call bingo. If you get a bingo, it will start to play music and light up, but you actually have to call it.
So this prevents player error, which...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There could be no player error in playing with a TED. But the thing that I like about the TEDs is that you can do something else while you're playing. I like to read a book.
That must make you really popular with the other players. This is their whole mental competition, and you're reading a book.
You know, so much of bingo, I think, is deliberately trying to annoy the other players. It's a very passive-aggressive game, and I will get right into it. You know, I love to just sit there reading my book, and if a bingo comes along, oh, wow, you know, this is interrupting me. You know, of course, I'll still call bingo, but... But I like to make it look like I'm, you know, think I'm in a library.
So do you enjoy this game, or was this really just research for your website?
It's really just research for my website. I find bingo to be really quite boring. That's why I read in the bingo room. I find the mathematics of analyzing the game pretty interesting. And I hope to publish something next month about it. Some, you know, real specifics about how my analysis at the Suncoast is going.
You said the TEDs make it impossible to miss a bingo. What if your hearing aid goes out?
Yeah, well, that would not be the TED's fault.
Okay. So are weekdays or weekends better to play?
That's a very good question.
Thank you.
And before I recently got into bingo, I indicated on my website that I recommend the players play Monday to Thursday. And I find now that it doesn't make much difference. The number of heads in the room will certainly increase on Fridays and Saturdays, but I find that these are generally recreational players that don't buy very many cards, and they are pushing out some of the real card-hogging local players. So I see no significant correlation between day of the week and number of cards purchased.
How did you go about, you know, getting your card count? I mean, did you just walk around the room asking people how many cards they had, or how did you do that?
You know, I started out by doing things that kind of old-fashioned way, where I counted heads and I looked at people's receipts and I, you know, I peered over their shoulders, because you can see on the TEDs how many cards they bought, and trying to do this kind of old-fashioned sampling. And, you know, I really felt that it wasn't scientific enough. So the way I do it now is I use something I built for my website, where you put in any given kind of bingo game, like, say, Double Hard Way, and how many of each column were called, for example, 3 Bs, 4 Is, 2 Ns, and so on, and how many people won. And this application will tell you the best estimate for the number of cards in session given when that bingo was hit and the balls that were called. And when you look at a whole session, you can combine all these results and get a pretty accurate figure about the number of cards that were in play for that session. For example, it might be about 3,000. And I think that these figures are pretty accurate to within about 10%. What has more variability, though, is you know, you don't know exactly who's going to show up for any given session. So there's a lot of variance in terms of just who's going to show up and how many cards they sell for any given session and time. That's why I need to play a lot to try to get enough data to get a meaningful average.
Now, you can buy level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, at least at station casinos.
Mm-hmm.
Which is better levels to play?
It all depends on which session you're buying. If you look at these bingo programs, every session there's some sort of a gimmick. For example, some of them just pay $50 to the winner of every game. Some sessions double, say, the even-numbered sessions. Some of them will triple certain sessions. And the last game is always the coverall game where they always give away more money. Sometimes it might be as little as $250. Sometimes it might be up to a minimum of $2,500. So,
I could you explain? I don't know what these levels are. What does that mean?
Okay. For example, at the Suncoast Casino, they have four different kinds of cards: blue, red, green, and tan. And for most games, the blue is the lowest card, and they might and the typical win is $50. So if you win with a blue card, you will win $50. A red card doubles any win. A green card triples them, and a tan card quadruples them. Now, naturally, though, these premium cards cost more.
Three times as much?
Yes, the premium cards cost more, but there is an economy of scale. A pack of blue cards costs $4. Reds are $7, greens are $10, and tans are $13. So if they didn't offer certain combination packages, the best value, assuming everything was proportional, would be the tan cards. But oftentimes in the last coverall game, it doesn't make any difference what kind of card you have, in which case buying the blue cards would be better for those sessions. Now, another thing to make things even more complicated is most casinos offer what's called electronic specials if you buy a TED. And these specials, they for a certain price, they will just load your machine with an assortment of different kinds of cards. And these deals offer, generally speaking, a good economy of scale and are the way you should go.
Even though they probably include validation, which you think is a bad bet?
Yes. At the station casinos, these packages come automatically validated, so you don't need to worry about that. However, at the Suncoast, you must pay extra to validate. Let me tell you specifically, and this is speaking just for the Suncoast, what kind of packages I recommend. For the 1 p.m. and the 9 p.m. sessions, where they have a lot of money in the coverall game, I recommend buying only blue packs. For every other session, I recommend what's called the B, as in the letter B, electronic special. And this advice comes after, an enormous amount of research.
Interesting. All right. So we're getting close to the end of the interview time, Michael. Before we let you go, is there anything on the Wizard of Odds websites that, this has been a couple months since you've been on the show, is there anything you'd like to point out to our listeners?
Let's see. I added a simple Keno game, but I'm really most proud of the two things that I wrote about Costa Rica. Number one, the analysis of Rummy, and number two, the whole report about all the casino conditions there.
And the prostitutes.
Yep. So, yeah, if I have a new blog entry, it's called Gambling in Costa Rica, and it lays out all the what games are popular there, what rules they tend to follow, remarks about 10 different casinos there. And it's hard to not talk about prostitution when you talk about the casinos in Costa Rica. And at the end of it, I spend more time talking about how business is done in that profession over there, based on information that was told to me by some friends I was with.
Ah, good. So your friends got all this information.
Yes, I went with a friend of mine from here in Vegas who shall be known as Costa Rica Rob, and he indulged in some of the pleasures down there, and it was kind enough to tell me all about it.
Uh-huh. Good. And then you took notes and you shared it with all of us on wizardofodds.com.
Yes, I did.
All right. Very
good.
Have a
good read.
All right. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks again for having me back. Thanks, Rich.
Yep. Thank you.
So, Munch, are you about to become an Advantage Bingo player, do you think?
No, I think I'd have to pass on that one. Bingo, just not my, not going to be my thing.
Good. I hate to think that I might have to change co-host again.
I was more tempted by Peter Liston and Advantage Slots than I was by Advantage Bingo, but,
Yeah, and Advantage Slots has got to be as interesting as watching paint dry. So,
right.
All right. Very good. So Michael has told me that he has to slip out the door. So if we have any more questions for him, we'll send him an email.
Oh, shoot. If we had time, I was going to ask him actually a slot question. But
He's still here, so ask quickly if you have it.
Yeah. So, Michael, if you wanted to determine the odds of a jackpot hitting on a slot machine, say it was, you know, five reels, how many spins do you have to watch before you can safely calculate the chance of the jackpot hitting?
I think that if you played the game, certainly if you played the game 1,000 times and you wrote down how many times you saw the jackpot symbol come up on each reel, you could get a pretty good estimate. Another thing you might try to do is to actually piece together the whole reel stripping if you write down all the different patterns. However, that's very complicated. I think a sampling of 1,000 would be more than enough. I think, you know, 300 would give you a pretty good number. And as I explain on my website, with video five-reel slot machines, every position on each reel has the same probability, so you don't need to worry about the weighted reels that is the case with three-reel single-line slots.
But if you're trying to map, sometimes I've been playing them, and there might be positioned vertically for three different symbols as it's going. But if all three are the same symbols, you don't know if that's just three or maybe three of four or three of five or three of six. All you know is at least in one spot, three in a row happen.
Yeah, it would be almost impossible to map out a reel strip on these games that have what are called stacked wilds, where they have a bunch of wild symbols that are consecutive. So if you see three of them, say on reel one, you don't know how many other ones are on the bottom and the top of it.
Very good.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else. During the month, there'll be a $400,000 March Money Madness Progressive. The Progressive starts at $10,000 and continues progressing 24/7 until it hits, sometime before $25,000, when it'll be randomly awarded to any slot club player. Every player playing the jackpot is awarded, when the jackpot is hit, gets $25 in free play. Immediately thereafter, the jackpot starts over again at $10,000, and it'll keep going until the end of the month, which is this Sunday, Easter. In terms of double points, they're going to have another double point day Easter Sunday, midnight to midnight. You'll find me on the Quick Quads machines, should you want to look. Last double point day, St. Patrick's Day, the March Money Madness hit at least three times, so it's likely to hit that many times too, that many times again on Easter. So that adds... It's already a good play without those extra bonuses, and that makes the bonuses makes it all the better. The free video poker class beginning at noon this coming Tuesday is probably one of the two most important classes. It's called What Video Poker Players Should Know About Slot Clubs. This talks about how Stations is different than Coast, which is different than Palms, which is different than the MGM, which is different than Harrah's, etc. So in terms of playing video poker with an advantage, players basically need to take the slot club into consideration. And the things in slot clubs that are important to me may not be so important to you. What's important to a local may not be so important to an out-of-towner. So that's going to start this Tuesday noon at the South Point. I was in the Palms today and learned that somebody showed up there this past Tuesday looking for my class. And, of course, it wasn't at the Palms. It was at South Point. But speaking of the Palms, every weekend they're giving away a 2013 Volkswagen Jetta car. The car is worth $18,000, and you can receive $15,000 in cash or free play if you prefer. This coming weekend is the last one. 10 people on both Friday and Saturday evenings get drawn. They get $500 in cash and a key, basically, to the car. And of those 20 people, one of those keys opens the car, and the other people get between $100 and $400 of free play. I am playing this week. I hope to win the car this week, so I strongly advise the rest of you to stay away, get out of my way, because I'm going to be driving that Volkswagen home, sort of, maybe. The play, earn, and win gifts for the last half of the month have the theme of Light Up My Life, where the top prize is a $100 gift card to Lowe's Hardware. Even better, they're out of Lowe's Hardware card, and so they're giving you Visa cards, which can be used at Lowe's in addition to bunches of other places. You can also earn fake fireplace, flashlights, a Tiffany lamp, among other gifts. Now, this is actually going to go until tomorrow, Friday. And then the next month, the theme for the first half of the month is jewelry. And it does include a $100 gift card. And an interesting feature that is listed in the mailers, but I don't have the details yet, is you can use your points over several Monday, Wednesday, Friday sessions. For example, I think it's going to work that if you like the Visa cards and didn't like the other gifts, and the Visa cards were, say, 40,000 points, and you played 120,000 points on a given day, you could get Visa cards 3 days in a row, or three Monday, Wednesday, Friday days in a row, on that 120,000 points. Now, I think that's going to be the way it works. I'll have more details next month. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest is now in session. It is called Deal Draw Poker. It is a version of double pay poker where you get paid on the deal and paid on the draw. The biggest difference between them is it cleaned up some of the unintentional errors. So if, for example, you're throwing away hands without playing it because you're confused whether it's a deal or a draw, the machine will say, do you really want to do this? And just that feature saves quite a bit of money for the players because it's really easy to get confused as to whether you're in the deal session or the draw session. Now, this game in general is a good game to play, especially for non-expert players, because the deal part of it, you're going to get paid at the appropriate rate whether you know your ace from a hole in the ground or not. The draw part, you still have to play it. But so even if the draw part is, say, 99%, the deal part is going to be 99.2, and you're going to get full value for that 99.2. Whereas on the draw part, how much value you get depends on how well you play. So that's it, and that's going to go until Sunday night. Our guest next week is Mark Billings. He's written a book called The Ultimate Edge, which discusses playing blackjack worldwide in the 1980s. Now, although the names were changed, Munchkin, do you think most of the book is true?
Oh, yeah. It absolutely is. I lived right behind the guys in the book. When I first moved to Las Vegas, lots of people lived around Twain and Swenson. A lot of blackjack players who came to town in the late 70s, early 80s, lived around Twain and Swenson. And it's funny, I knew the guys in the book except for Mark. I didn't meet Mark until recently. But the rest of the people in the book I did. So yeah, a lot of the stories in the book I remember, knew when they happened, and hearing about them at the time.
Are you in the book at all? But in disguise somehow?
I don't think I am. I don't think I am. It's also very interesting for people who've never read about, you know, playing blackjack with hidden computers and some of the high tech aspects of, beating the game back then. So, for me, it was a really, really interesting book just because I knew the people and, was kind of shocked to see it when it first came out.
You shocked to see it, meaning you wish some secret stayed secret, or?
Oh, no, it wasn't that. It was just I didn't know Mark at the time. So when this book came out by a guy named Mark Billings, I wasn't expecting to open it up and go, oh my God, these are all the guys I knew, you know, back then. So.
All right. Now in 2 weeks, our guest will be Kathy Hulbert, also known as Kat Hulbert, who was interviewed in Munchkin's book, Gambling Wizards, Interviews with the World's Greatest Gamblers. Kat also wrote a book called Outplaying the Boys, Poker Tips for Competitive Women. Now, I'm actually going to be playing poker with both Kathy and Munchkin, among others, after the show. Fortunately for my sake, it's low stakes and it's limit hold'em. I'd be way out of my league were the stakes higher, the game no limit, or the bar not open.
Right, yeah. I think the bar being open is a great equalizer in that game.
Yeah, I'm a total non-drinker, so I can take advantage of people who take advantage.
Right.
So how well do you know Kat?
I know Kat pretty well, and I have to say, I thought she was the most interesting interview in my book. Two things that I thought were really interesting: the perspective she brought, being a woman in the professional blackjack world and the poker world, and the other thing is the big difference between professional blackjack players and professional poker players. They really are completely different types of people.
And some overlap, but there's also some, professional video poker. I know a lot of video poker players who are also blackjack players and a lot of video poker players who are also poker players. But I guess I don't know anybody who's all three, or other than casually.
You know, also she had a slot machine team as well back 25 years ago, and used to employ these little old ladies on Social Security to pull the handles for her. So, she's got a well-rounded background in advantage gambling.
And she's very colorful. She does not mince words, so Lawrence will have to be ready with the beeper that night with a 7-second delay. It should be fine.
Right.
Kat Sparkles. All right, so we got about a minute left, Munchkin. You sent me an email today that said, if we have time, let's talk about this, and I didn't write it down. Do you remember what it was?
The Palms is opening a bar where they're going to have board games in it. And it just, when I first moved to Vegas, it was great because both you and I were backgammon players, but yes. Back then there were bars that had lots of backgammon tables, and there was money to be made. So I'm hoping that they'll put some backgammon in at the Palms.
Uh-huh. Do you, are your backgammon skills still sufficient?
I haven't played in years, who knows, maybe it would induce me to get back into it.
Because when we played, there weren't any backgammon computers, and so it took us a long time to get decent. And now, using the modern computers and stuff, players in 3 months can get as good as we got in 3 or 4 years. So
that's true, but hey, I could always get one of those computers too. Maybe practice a little.
And knowing you and me, we might practice a lot, because that's kind of the way we do things. So,
yeah,
good. So I haven't actually, I've seen the new bar, but I actually haven't seen games. I haven't been paying attention. Are they there now, or are they just coming soon?
The article said coming soon. So,
all right.
So, I haven't been to the bar myself, so I don't know.
So we got 10 seconds left. I want to hope everybody goes out and hits lots of royal flushes. Thank you to Michael Shackelford. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.